knows what that means. Obviously, Iran knew we cared about their missile program. We have a contentious relationship with Iran. There are groups in the United States and in Iran who would like to try and improve the relationship, to try and build on the successful agreement to cap Iran's nuclear program. But there are also groups both in Iran and here in the United States who want to maintain a relationship that's highly conflictual and maybe want to go beyond that. And it seems to me that the Trump administration is aligning itself with those groups as well, wants to raise the temperature with Iran. I think this is playing with fire in a number of respects. One thing we know about Iran is they don't particularly respond well to American pressure. If we start threatening them militarily, if we start taking military action against them, that will give them an obvious incentive to try and restart their nuclear program. And that then places the United States in the position of whether or not it genuinely wants to go to war to try and prevent that. I think the Obama administration understood that that path was not the path we wanted to go down. I think we have to worry now, given the attitude of Mr. Trump and some of his closest advisors, that they actually see a conflict with Iran as being in the United States' interests. The big problem, of course, is they also seem to want to have a conflict with almost the entire Islamic world, while at the same time getting some of the members of the Arab or Islamic world to help us with ISIS. Again, this is just an example of where their policies are deeply contradictory and therefore are unlikely to succeed.
Finally, you just tweeted New theory, you just tweeted, the media is not covering terrorism. Is Trump serious, delusional, incurably dishonest? All of the above, Donald Trump falsely claiming Monday during a speech to U.S. CENTCOM in Florida at the MacDill Air Base that the media is intentionally covering up terrorist attacks. Your response?
Well, again, I think that there's no evidence of this at all. If anything, I think the media has overcovered the problem of terrorism really ever since 9/11. It's why Americans greatly exaggerate the actual risk they are under. The risk that Americans face from a terrorist attack here in the United States is astronomically small, sort of one chance in 4 million. There are so many other things that are much more of a danger to us, much more of a problem that we should be worrying about.
We're going to have to leave it there. Professor Stephen Walt, thanks so much for joining us, Professor of International Relations at Harvard University. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Wondering why tuition has more than doubled since 1990? Angry at the lack of concern politicians have for youth issues? So are many students, but there is something we can do. Register to vote for November's election. We will be heard. And don't forget that if you are registered but have moved, you should re-register at your new address. For more information, contact NYPIRG at 632-6457. That's 632-6457 and online at NYPIRG.org. That's NYPIRG.org.
Do you like to savor a cup of Java in the morning? I know I do, and we're definitely not alone. New Yorkers love their coffee and drink lots of it. With that in mind, just imagine the amount of trash that's created every day by people using disposable coffee cups. There's a better alternative, you know. By using a reusable coffee mug, you can save natural resources, landfill space, and money too. It's called reuse, and it's even better than recycling. So remember, using it once is not enough. Choose to reuse.
And you have chosen to listen to WUSB Stony Brook, where the time is just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. And that means it's time once again for Off the Wall. And a very, very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel here. Kyle over there.
Hi, Emmanuel. How are you?
I feel good because, you know, we're in this brand new studio. Temporary, though it may be.
It is still new.
It's brand new. Everything works. Look at this. Our phone has a picture on it. It has a scenic view.
Those look like stock pictures, though. I feel like we could put our own better pictures there.
Is it? Am I crazy, or did that picture change since we started the show?
Yeah, it's a slideshow.
So we have a phone that has a color picture on it that changes.
Yeah.
In the old studio, our phone didn't have a dial tone or a cable that worked. And, I mean, this is just... I'm getting a sense of the opulence that our leader promised us. I am getting tired of winning.
Are you?
No. But seriously, it's good because we have things. We have our new theme. We have all kinds of cool people around us, and challenges are ahead. Oh, the picture changed again. Now we're looking at mountains. Okay, that's going to be distracting. I can't look at the phone. But yeah, we have all kinds of cool things happening, and horrible things happening too. But you know, sometimes they play off against each other, and we have to kind of.
I brought a list.
You brought a list of things. All right, but let me just remind people that if you're thinking of tuning away from us to listen to the court hearings, and hopefully I didn't just remind you to do that. Apparently they scheduled it right opposite us. Some kind of telephone hearing.
Yeah, these are the ones from the Seattle Court or the 9th District, 9th Federal.
Can I just applaud Seattle? Thank you, Seattle judge, Seattle so-called judge, as Trump would say, for stepping in and saying, no, you can't do this Muslim travel ban. It's suspended, and I got the right to do that. And it's infuriating Trump. Just for that alone, just for infuriating Trump, I respect him. But he gets it. The guy gets it, and now this hearing is going to be basically appealing that. Each side gets a half hour, and sometime tonight, supposedly, or at the latest tomorrow morning, we're going to have a decision.
Yeah. This is probably just a warm-up. I am equally proud of that place that I come from. And it's not devoid of conservatives. There's a diverse political ecosystem there, but they're also well versed in how our system works, and I think what you're seeing is people working together to have a functioning democracy, to have something that works the way it is supposed to, with checks and so on.
And what's interesting is this guy, this judge, is a Republican. He was appointed by George W. Bush. So, folks, you know, the system can work, and fairness can prevail regardless of political status.
Yes.
If you have rational, reasonable people looking at things. And right now, you know, in our leadership, I'm sorry to say we do not have that. We have a bunch of crybaby lunatics, and that is how they will go down in history. All you have to do is look at them, look at the way they express themselves, look at the way they defend themselves, look at the conclusions they reach, the lies they spout. I'm not speaking out of hysteria here. These are facts that can be backed up with solid evidence. We all see it, and we're all kind of, you know, in bewilderment and disbelief, saying, how did this ever happen, and what's going to happen next? But those facts, I don't think, are very disputable. We are in new territory this country has never been in before, and it's rather dangerous.
Oh, dangerous, but we're well prepared for it. And I'd say those crybabies, they are so cute. They're so cute because they turn right around, and they say, no, you're the crybabies. And they're doing that. You hear this, oh, the angry left. We're not angry. We're fine.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I mean, we're fine. We're fine being angry.
Not about being left. Not about being citizens and active and vocal and participating. Well, it's the process. And come on.
It's interesting you say that because, we were accused of being, what was the term? Snowflakes, I believe. Why did they come up with these stupid phrases? Yeah, okay, snowflakes, fine. Call us that if you want to call us snowflakes. No. But I'll tell you what, a bunch of snowflakes together is a force you don't want to encounter.
Yeah, it's called an avalanche.
It's called a snowball, too, or whatever. Yeah, all kinds of things that can hit you right in the face if you're a Nazi.
Yeah, or if you hang out and approve of, therefore bang with Nazis, you can get it too.
Yeah, I mean, we could just draw parallels all night long. But here's the thing. We had the Super Bowl on Sunday, and all these supposed, strong patriot-type people are offended by the commercials that called for inclusiveness. And they want to boycott Budweiser, of all things, and all kinds of other companies because they say, oh, immigration is what built the nation, and we should be open, and we should be a little kinder and less hateful. And they're crybabies. They're saying that they can't handle that. Simple message like this. They're angry at a Coke commercial, apparently forgetting that Coke commercial, I think, aired in 2014. It wasn't even new.
Right.
All kinds of things like that just show they're pretty damn sensitive, too, when their misguided beliefs are challenged.
I will say it felt a little bit like an overcompensation. Now, don't interrupt me. Don't correct me, because I will qualify that. It felt like that. It could be perceived as an overcompensation. But these are times when a little bit of compensating is necessary. So, and I will also follow up that is how corporations communicate. It is through advertising. Mm-hmm. That is their that is how they reach their audience, and they communicate what the will of that corporation is in light of a political environment, social trends, whatever they need to communicate to their customers and people who would recognize that brand. It is communicated through these means, and given the election and what we're looking at going into this administration, it is heartening when you get past the sort of surface of perhaps it being a bit too much, because you can kind of be beat over the head with people saying the same thing and the same thing, but then wondering, well, what are we doing to make that a reality, mm-hmm. other than just celebrating it. And so that would be my sort of slight critique, but I don't even think so. In retrospect, there probably could have been even more and stronger messages in
it. Well, corporate America has certainly changed. I mean, there is no question about that. You just look at the messages coming out. I mean, Washington State is a great example. All those tech companies filing suit against the Trump administration for the travel ban, how it's affecting them. And, it's great to see them backpedaling and saying things like it's not a ban, even though they the ones who said it was a ban. There's evidence of Giuliani being talked to by Trump saying, how can I make the Muslim ban legal? Words like that. They use the word ban, and then they say, why are you using the word ban? You know, that Saturday Night Live sketch with Melissa McCarthy. Oh, my God, that was great. Playing Sean Spicer. She really nailed it, because that's not so far from the truth. That's what's crazy about this. There is a ban in effect. But having these companies, these corporations, actually stepping forward and saying, this is wrong, this is something that hurts us, and we're not going to stand for it, that is evolution. Evolution in the corporate level, and not just in Washington, in California, in New York, throughout the country. And it shows how we as a people have changed.
And it's not entirely millennial baiting with your cause or associating yourself with activism if, as a corporate entity and among your competitors or industry partners, there's action behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You can talk about it, but if that's all you're doing and you just want to sell whatever the millennials who are getting their butts kicked on the front lines, mm-hmm. You just want to make money off of their passion and interest in activism, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. You've got to back it up.
Absolutely. And that's what we saw in Washington State on a number of levels. And now, California, there's a great article in the Washington Post that kind of sums it up in the headline. California and President Trump are going to war with each other. And that's because California has basically stated, no, we're not going to stop having what they call sanctuary cities. In fact, we're going to make the entire state a sanctuary state. That means that if somebody is... And this is a whole other issue. I don't want to use the phrase illegal alien because here's the reason. People don't seem to understand this. What other quote-unquote crime do you define somebody as illegal? I mean, you could murder somebody, but you're not called an illegal person, illegal whatever. What's that?
President.
Illegal president?
I don't know.
Well, the thing is, you can say something like they're an undocumented alien. Okay, and that is a crime, I guess, in certain places. Fine. Mm-hmm. But illegal, where do you ever attach the word illegal to a crime except for that particular refugee / immigrant / whatever status where they are already at a huge disadvantage, feeling victimized? And it is super dehumanizing to refer to somebody in that manner, to just simply slap the word illegal in front of their however it is you're describing them. But we have a president that not only uses that word, and you might notice Obama never even used the word illegal alien, I don't think. But what Trump does, he says illegals, which is really the most offensive way you can refer to it. It dehumanizes them completely. They are illegals. It's like they're not even human.
Invalidating a whole race, a whole class of people.
A whole class, yeah. And that's something that we really should challenge on every level. Yeah, you know, you could say undocumented aliens are a problem. Fine. We can have that discussion. But when you start saying things like they're a bunch of illegals, you know, it's one tiny step away from referring to them in a derogatory racial or religious term of your choice. And we should not allow that to happen because it just changes the dynamic of the conversation. But anyway, so California is saying that we're not going to have an environment where people who are undocumented have to feel like they can't report a crime to the police or they can't walk in the street without fear of the authorities chasing them and demanding to know their immigration status. I mean, how many times have we walked around in foreign countries and been accosted by the authorities and we had to prove that we were there legally? Never.
Once.
When?
Frankfurt.
Were we?
Yeah, in Germany. We had to show ID. We got stopped by a bunch of police.
Did that happen in the train station?
Yeah.
I thought we saw that happening to somebody.
No, that was us.
That happened to us, too. But we kind of walked right up into the scene, didn't we?
Yeah, we kind of saw it going on.
Yeah, we were curious what was going on, so we walked up to them. And I think that's when we got, okay, fine. But it really doesn't happen very often to people like us, meaning white people, meaning Americans. So California is saying, you know what, we're going to be a sanctuary state if you pull this crap. And war, economic war, perhaps. And this led to a very interesting chart that I saw in this Washington Post article. I didn't realize this before, but apparently California is one of the states where the tax revenue exceeds the federal spending. In other words, they give back more to the federal government than they receive. Now, think about that. So if the federal government decides they're going to cut off funding to California, the federal government is going to lose because they get back more from California tax dollars than they spend. And you know, California is one of the states that is true. You know what some of the other states are? New York. I'm showing you the graph, Kyle.
That's a lot. Yeah,
the people can't see it, but...
That's $50 billion that New York... makes for the government.
Yeah, we're number two, actually.
And what I'm seeing of California, that looks a little bit less, probably maybe $15 billion.
California, the numbers are a lot higher in California, but the amount that the tax revenue exceeds the federal spending isn't as much as in New York.
Yeah, I'm just saying the difference.
Yeah,
what the net difference is.
But the number one state is New Jersey, if you can believe that.
Where's that?
It's over here,
yeah,
New Jersey.
Wow.
Number one is New Jersey. Number two is New York. Number three is Minnesota. Number four is Illinois. You see a trend here? These are Democratic states. Now, okay, Texas is number five. That's an exception. So they edge out by a little bit. Massachusetts, number six. Ohio, they kind of go back and forth. But, you know, the big ones, who's number eight? Number eight is Connecticut.
Washington.
Washington is, Washington, I don't think it's one of them, but they're...
Yeah, they're not.
Where are they?
They're right there. You passed it. They cost the government
not money. By much, though. So the states that cost more, let's look at those, because they're down a little further. Look at Florida. Florida, so they spend a lot more in Florida than they get back. Same thing in Virginia, same thing in South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, New Mexico, West Virginia, Idaho. You see a trend here. Arizona, all these right-wing states.
Right.
We spend more there than we get back. And yet these are the states that say, hey, federal government, leave us alone. Get out of here. Well, you know, if they were to do that,
leave your money.
They'd be spinning down that bowl and almost out into the sewer system.
Whoosh.
Yeah. So that's something to think about. And I didn't know that before looking at this article, and that graph is there.
Something to keep in mind. Gotta look at all these things. That is a factor. That's what you miss out on by imposing this stuff, by discrediting an entire state, a massive state such as California.
Yeah. Now New York has also stepped up, saying that we will guarantee Roe versus Wade type protections if the federal government ever goes the way of overturning that. Same thing with health care. And other states are doing the same thing too, stepping up. And maybe it should be that way. Maybe states should be the ones leading the fight in these basic human rights of health care and non-harassment from authorities and, you know, basic standard of living, that kind of thing. I don't know. I'd probably feel a lot more comfortable knowing that we have more of a say. It's more localized. But yeah, California versus United States. I would go with California, I got to say. You know, it would be a formidable force. Don't they have like the third largest economy in the world if you don't count the rest of the United States? It's incredible. There's a lot going on out there.
Yeah, yeah. Both California and Washington are massive sources of income. Washington because of aerospace and tech. California because of film, culture, obviously, Hollywood and tech. But California also has a lot of food.
They do. Yeah, they do have a lot of food. You're right. They grow oranges.
Yeah.
And
almonds.
They grow almonds. That takes up a lot of space. Almonds.
A lot of water, too.
A lot of water. Yeah. A lot of water. But now they have water in California, so that's not a problem anymore. But, yeah, so these are the issues that are occurring right now. Just today, actually, with regard to the Standing Rock issue, the Army said that they're going to move ahead. We heard this last week, but now it's official. The Army is going to go ahead and grant the final permit to allow this to move forward.
Yeah, and they're not going to be going through with the environmental impact statement. They are dropping that completely from all accounts I've read. So what we were hoping for was a fair look at that, that evaluated the concerns, the effect on millions of people, the treaty rights, and it's looking like that's going to be completely thrown out. And what has happened as a result is that people are mobilizing, and as said before, the tribes are going to be fighting this tooth and nail in the court system, which is appropriate, something you would expect.
You know, I'm all for that. I'm all for fighting it in the court system, but I'm also for fighting it on the front line as well and resuming whatever plans were in place before the apparent victory in November. Was it November or December where Obama basically stepped in and seemed to listen?
Yeah.
So, you know, I hope that does not diminish.
It will not. I think this is going to be it was part of the steps, part of going about it through the processes that are available and the mechanisms there. But with this, it is a sign of the expediting and the promise of this administration. And so people have responded. Just briefly, there's protests in L.A. As we speak. There's also been some protests in Houston at Energy Transfer Partners headquarters. There's also a call for general strikes February 17th, March 1st, April 25th, and April 29th were some dates I saw on social media. There's also an Indigenous People's March on Washington, D.C. That's going to be happening on March 10th. That's a couple months out. That's going to be very much like the Women's March, and I believe the scientists also, they're doing something similar soon. And the veterans who mobilized out to Standing Rock, there's a couple groups, I think Vets Stand or Stand with Standing Rock and Vets Respond. Both of those groups are fundraising. I think they raised like $100,000, or I don't know, one or the other group raised a bunch of money. I'm not sure if that's for legal fees or for supplies and equipment on the ground. They're going to be redeploying there to stand with the tribes there. There are several other pipeline projects I talked about. One in the area that was going to be near Indian Point. There's another one in Texas. I think there's another camp that's starting. And specifically to Standing Rock, there's been there was sort of a lot of confusion. But basically, there are two new camps on land that they have that has been leased or that is owned by the tribes or people that have donated it to the camps. And those camps are invite only. And they are calling for help to move things and finish cleaning up the stuff that is in the flood areas.
What would you say the reason is for it being invite only?
Well, I think the short answer is it's a regrouping. You have to understand that the tribe intends to fight this vigorously in court. And it's great to show these large numbers, but just managing that, from what I've read, it seems that that becomes a burden in and of itself, and it takes away from the focus of the legal arguments and the channels and mechanisms to actually affect this issue. So it feels like the leadership there is regrouping to a degree obviously paring down the camps that they have to something that's more manageable. You can imagine thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Not only is there a lot of garbage and remaining equipment and things that get left behind, but there's also social things that go on. It's a huge operation, and I think to reiterate what they had said, it's about safety, and they don't want to put anybody in jeopardy.
It's also like minus 50 degrees over there.
The weather there is absolutely a concern. It's a big deal to live out there, and many people have been out there for months. So I think they took the opportunity to wait for the determination on the environmental impact statement to regroup, to also address the floodplain. The main Ocheti Sakawan camp was in an area that during the springtime sees up to, like, I think 18 inches of flooding.
Wow.
So the water protectors, being aware and in tune with the environment there, wanted to clean the area while everything was frozen so that when it gets flooded, you don't have garbage and things floating around and sort of contradicting the whole point of this exercise.
So I guess the upshot is to listen, pay attention, and await further instructions as far as what is needed. This is not going to be forgotten. This is not something that's people are going to roll over and be defeated. But it has to be done right.
It does. It does. There's a lot people can do. I would suggest look very, very critically through the reporting. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of just bad information. It's not being reported. And I think we'll elaborate. We're going to talk a little bit about this in the next tomorrow, I think. But the point being is that they still need help out there.
Right.
If you are interested and you can provide help, that they're vetting people, interviewing them to make sure that they're not provocateurs, etc. And
that's a real thing.
Yeah. And if you can't make it there, there's a lot you can do. You could show up in your local city. You could do some writing. You could realign your finances such that you're not invested in a lot of the banks that are supporting this. Citibank is one of the larger ones.
Okay.
And you can call your senators and call as many entities that you have a relationship or like to forge a relationship with to make them keenly aware of how you feel about it and continue to get the message out there.
Okay.
that this is profoundly racist. I mean, the original site was moved because another whiter town didn't want it because it would affect their water, and there's just a lot that this is going to be, I think, I don't know that what's the word? It's influencing, you know. It mm-hmm. speaks to it. This is a metaphor for so many other fights.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so
microcosm, perhaps, is that the word?
Yeah, instructive, I think, was the word I was looking for.
Or that. So,
yeah, and anyway, the information that is there is as I said, few and far between. Encourage media outlets to go there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking about full news crews.
Well, okay, and on that subject, if you're looking for updates, you couldn't do better than to watch Aboriginal People's Television Network out of Canada. And those of you who are not in Canada, who don't have Canadian dishes, can go to aptn.ca and watch the stream there, see the nightly newscast. They're the only people, only major network that actually covers this story on a regular basis. And yeah, they are a major network in Canada. Unfortunately, we have no such major network here in this country, but we're fortunate enough to be able to witness what they're doing. And also, of course, Democracy Now! Has been covering this.
And educate yourself. Educate yourself about transportation. Educate yourself about gasoline. Mm-hmm. And its carcinogenic effects, okay? And see the interconnectedness. I mean, part of what I think Indigenous people are telling us is that these things are connected. This is an Earth system. We are participants in a bigger habitat. And no one thing isn't connected. And that goes to industrial things, too. These companies, whether it's an oil company or a car company or airlines and military contractors, they are all diversified and they're all invested in this technology, this technology that puts awful pollutants into our air. Mm-hmm. And, you know, question why we don't have better public transportation. Question why our cities aren't built around bicycles. Okay, and stop believing people that say they use jargon and they greenwash. This is the stopgap. We're gonna do what we've been doing for 200 years because Rockefeller told us because it's the stopgap and don't believe them when they tell you this is the oil revolution. It's not a revolution.
Yeah, did you see that during the Super Bowl?
It's garbage.
The oil, the friendly oil commercial.
There's no oil or gas revolution. That is complete and utter garbage.
Yeah.
Anybody that tells you that, you just do your own research. I'm not gonna go on anymore. But it is upon us to be a lot smarter, and we need massive change towards better communities and better cities, not just more of the same. And these advertisers and car companies and everything, they all want you to just spend the money, and then when you get sick, mysteriously transfer all that money to the pharmaceutical companies.
Yes. Well, as you can see, this opens the door to all kinds of issues. But if you're interested in what's going on at Standing Rock, it's a continuing story, and there are outlets, there are ways of finding out. Hey, I just found the Resistance Calendar. Go to resistancecalendar.org if you want a list of all the things that are happening throughout the country. There are so many. Just today, we have No Ban, No Wall Council presentation in Minneapolis. We have New York City students walkout, which obviously already happened because I don't think many students are in class right now. Resist Trump Tuesdays, that's happening right now from 6 to 8 p.m. in New York City. We have Breaking Up with America KKK in L.A. And every single day there are things happening throughout the country. So
this is unbelievable.
It is. It's really cool. Yeah, and you know the organizational abilities have progressed so far that we can have things like this, resistancecalendar.org, constantly updating, and all sorts of ways of getting complete information and just gathering people together. And I think that's really something that's cool and impressive. Something else that really impressed me, I don't know if you guys remember this, or you should if you listen to the show, because it was only last week. We found this this CD from a guy that sent it in to us 14 years ago. 14 years ago, he sent in a CD. In fact, I'm going to play just a little bit of it.
The weasel's in the hen house, spreading terror and fear. And if somebody don't stop him, there'll be blood everywhere. Dangerous days.
The song is called Dangerous Days. It was sent in by this guy, don't have the information, David Fursch. And he sent it in, and there was a handwritten note in there saying that he used to do a show on WUSB in 1965, well before we went FM, and even well before the old studio was built. And we just found this during our digitizing of all the CDs. We're digitizing about 100,000 CDs for the radio station. And this was one of the ones that was not found on Gracenote, so it has to be transferred to a human for inclusion. But I wanted to read the note on the air and play the song, because the song was particularly apropos for the current status of our country. Well, guess what? One of our listeners actually was able to track down David and share this information with him, that his song was aired. And he was thrilled. Thanks to Andrew for tracking him down, even though his email address had changed. And this is some of what he said to Andrew. Talk about a total surprise, which made my month, at least. This is crazy. Found after all these years, just when it's needed again, along with so much more. Many thanks for contacting me. I'm also most gratified and not surprised to hear what good stuff the station's doing in these dangerous days. Now I can listen digitally. Maybe he's listening right now. To add my two cents, I'll be wistfully looking back at CDs and the like, being truly old school. And in that regard, I want to send you and the station my two album CDs. He's up in Massachusetts. And David, I hope you send us all your material, and maybe Gracenote will find it. But even if Gracenote doesn't find it, we will encode it and have it in our digital library. So isn't that cool that someone who sent us something so long ago, who has involved the station even longer ago, is able to find out in a distant state, well, not that distant, I guess Massachusetts, that his music was played on our radio airwaves. And I think that is the power of communication.
Yeah, that's special. I mean, I can't say that I was surprised, or that it would be impossible to track him down, but I can't believe how fast it did.
Well, we didn't even try to track him down. That's what's amazing. You know,
somebody put the word out.
You do something on the radio, people are going to find out about it.
And, oh, yeah.
It's there forever, too. If you go to, we don't tell this enough, but if you go to 2600.com/off the wall, you can see every single one of our shows going all the way back to 2003. Coincidentally, the very year that David Fursch wrote to us at the station and sent his CD in. I don't know if the CD ever got played or if it ever even was opened. I think it was opened. I think it was in the library, but I'm not sure if it got played. But now it's getting a lot of attention, and it should.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's been as prolific or just kept going and has more.
Yeah, and it just goes to show also that we hold on to things here at the radio station, and we value things. History is so important to us. And that's why we do things like encode the CDs into digital format so that if we're not able to get to the CDs, we can get to it digitally. It's saved forever and transferred down through the generations. So it's really cool. And we look forward to getting more from him and more from lots of other people as
well. It's just a sample. I mean, there's all these other artifacts that we collect and found in all the discs, but when those individual and self-published discs get completed, we'll probably have many, many other stories just like that.
Yeah, it's incredible. Going through the many, many CDs that we've gone through already, tens of thousands, and realizing that most of the artists are artists that the majority of people have never heard of before, but are likely to be found playing on our airwaves because we want to hear alternatives. That's what we are, the alternative sound. And there are so many musicians out there, so much good music out there that you would never hear otherwise. So that's what's hugely important about non-commercial radio and saving things, valuing things. And so thank you, David, for that. And if you want to look up David's music, his last name is spelled F-E-R-S-H. I'm sure you can find it in various places. But now going back to some current news, all kinds of things going on throughout the country. And one of the things that happened, I think this was last Wednesday, were riots in Berkeley. Riots in Berkeley because of the that right-wing idiot guy, Milu. I don't know how to say his last name. You're not. Milu Y. That's because that's what I want to say to him. Milu Y. Why are you such an idiot? This is the alt-right guy that just basically preaches racism and hate and inspires crowds of people to demonstrate against him.
That racist queer dilettante?
Yeah, he's gay, you know. But I guess, you know, gay people can be racist as well. Yeah, sure. You know, I'm not surprised by that. But to me, he just seems to be somebody who it's like the equivalent of an internet troll in real life.
Yeah, he likes to bait liberals and the left, the quote left, and have that gotcha where they try to explain to him that hate speech is not the same as free speech, and then he ignorantly says gotcha. Uh-huh. And no, you're not really practicing what you preach with your free speech. And then the liberals are like, no, you bang with people who are into the hate speech and you dabble in it. Shut up.
Yeah, and they got him to shut up last Wednesday. They got the speech canceled. This is where I start to have some issues because, you know, I have a belief about trolls and idiots and sometimes presidents. I think that if they are saying hateful, stupid, offensive things, the solution is not to shut them up. The solution is to let them speak. To let them speak and show their true colors. And I think what happened in Berkeley last week might not have been the best thing because by preventing him from speaking, I'm not sure if that was the intent of most of the protesters. According to the mass media, it was. It turns the attention to the protesters as the problem instead of the hateful idiot speech speaking racist rhetoric. And I think that's... You got to let people like that talk to basically solidify who they are. I understand. I understand the passion against somebody like that. I'd probably be demonstrating too if he were to come to a place like Stony Brook. And God, I hope he never does. But that's what free speech is about. Now, there are exceptions, of course. If you're inciting riots and preaching genocide on the spot and things like that, that's when they, you know, get the punch in the face or just, you know, are not given a platform at all.
The shut up.
Exactly.
That I said.
Yeah.
That's
But this guy is clever. You know, we were trying to find the actual dirt on him where he's preaching something specific. And it's I haven't found it yet, but I, you know, a lot of people are acting on his behalf. He has his minions. But what can you actually pin on him? It's difficult to do that. And by preventing him from speaking, basically the people on the left are portrayed inaccurately as against freedom of speech. In fact, you know, Trump is, and I'm all for the Trump tweets. That's why I like the fact that Trump has kept his Twitter account, because he continues to say these asinine things, basically saying he wants to cut off Berkeley's financial aid because they don't stand for freedom of speech. First of all, I believe it was Berkeley that invited him to speak, and it was the demonstrators in the street that prevented him from speaking. He can cut off the financial aid to the demonstrators if he can figure out who they are. Sure, why not? But the college itself invited him, so that just doesn't even make any sense. But it basically aligns Trump with this right-wing hate that this guy preaches. And that's something that I'm glad I heard. Imagine keeping Trump from tweeting that. You know, then you would not hear that. You would not know how full of hate he is, too. So, you know, I've got mixed feelings on this. I think the people in the streets in Berkeley, they know how to fight, you know, and that's important to know how to fight. And a lot of us are saying, yeah, this is war. We're going to fight, but do you know how to win? You know, you got to win the fight too. And if you're just fighting and not thinking about, okay, how do we get more people on our side? How do we make this even bigger? Then you would think this through and realize that this is going to bring people to his side, because it's going to be perceived that you're shutting down anyone that you disagree with. And that is always a bad thing. Now, counter that with the Democrats. The Democrats know how to win, but they don't know how to fight. And that's what we saw in the election. You know, they all assumed they were going to win. They just didn't know how to go out and reach the people and fight for it. So they were shocked in November when they lost, because they didn't fight. So, you know, if you get these two sides together, you know, the people in the street and the Democrats, and you fight and you know how to win, you might actually get there. That's my theory.
And you're more organized. You coordinate and stick to what you're stick to the high road, as they said, or the right side of it. I think that's what you've seen in the pipeline stuff, is that, you know, you remain peaceful, and that's goes all the way back to the 60s. That's your moral high ground in that action.
Yeah, I mean, that's not to say don't be impassioned, don't be loud, don't be disruptive. Absolutely, be all of that. But when you completely shut down opposition, even if it's offensive opposition, then you might be alienating the people that would otherwise be won over and allow you to really make some progress. I don't know. That's just something that bugged me a little bit about that.
And there's always creativity and humor.
Humor. Oh, my God. Humor is just so important. Listen to what Michael Moore says. You know, he always has something funny to say and is always open and inclusive to other ideas. Even if they're offensive and ignorant, you can find humor in these things. And that's how you win people over, not by just shouting them down and you know, breaking things. But, you know, sometimes when you oppress people enough, that is what's going to happen, and you can't avoid it. And we've been talking about that as well.
Well, and some of this is the way these actions are managed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get police in there, you start surrounding people. You're going to get people that split off.
Yes.
Do something, light something. And to say nothing of provocateurs, I don't want to get into, like, you know, conspiracy, anything.
That's going to happen. That's inevitable.
That happens too. But the point is, the management of these actions, whether it's a university or a municipality, does have an impact. And I think cities and entities that you know, host stuff like this or whatnot, and are aware that people are going to be expressing themselves, need to take that into consideration. You start bringing in shields and sprays and all this stuff, people get anxious. Mm-hmm. People realize that it almost it's self-escalating.
Yes.
Because the enforcement is prepared, and it almost insinuates that, oh, wow, they see us as this. So it subconsciously you start getting people that resist inappropriate ways. If police aren't wearing paramilitary clothing, I would venture to say that and they're maybe talking to people, and like not covering their face and being human, you probably get a different crowd. But that again is circumstantial. It changes from action to
regardless
action.
No matter what happens, do not let this deter you from going out and expressing yourself. Even if there are provocateurs and people breaking things, you still have the right to be out there expressing yourself in your own terms. That is a side effect of having such a loud voice that that might turn other people off. You might actually wind up getting less people showing up at the demonstrations as a result of all that. So that's something to think through carefully. I mean, there are times for destruction and for the buildings burning. Absolutely. I that's called revolution. I don't know if we're there yet. I don't know if that's, but Trump, 8 years of Trump, I think would push this country in that direction very, very strongly. If he shuts down opposition and cracks down on any individualistic expression.
Continues to?
Yeah, but in a way that is extremely oppressive, then people are pushed. Then people have no other way. That is when the bad things happen. And I'd like to think that we can avoid that through peaceful protest and through expressing ourselves. But like we've said before, if people are pushed enough and have no way of expressing themselves, that is the road that you wind up going down. I'd like to actually, on that note, demonstrate that and also try something for the first time in this new studio. By the way, isn't it nice? I feel like we're doing actual radio. You know how it was always a struggle, both in the old studio and in the other studio at the other radio station. It's a constant struggle just to do radio. But here, in this room, and there's no distractions. The light is on. It works. We can see. The computer works. The board works. All the sound is. I'm probably jinxing it by saying this, but it just feels like things work.
Yeah, it does. It's very nice. But I don't want to dwell on just that.
No. But I want to try to use the phone now because I've never done that before. I'm going to bring the phone up. And could you push the speaker button? Maybe that'll work. Okay, but it's over there, though. It's not on the board. So, I have the phone up there. Is there anything else you think I should be doing? We weren't told how to do this. Or if we were told, I forgot how to do it.
Maybe it's the other phone that's by the board.
The other phone? This phone? Okay,
yeah.
We'll turn that off. So you're saying I should hit that
button.
Hit
speaker.
Okay. Okay, that didn't come up either. Interesting. All right. I'm not sure how to get it to come. Well, I guess I can put a microphone next to the phone.
What? I'll sacrifice my microphone.
Okay. Just put it next to the speaker there. Kyle's sacrificing his microphone, and it's possible it doesn't work yet. There's always that chance. Okay. Can you move the microphone a little closer? Where is the speaker? Okay. Well, anyway, I'm going to dial a number. This is the number for the White House feedback line. And listen to what happens now. It takes a long time for phone calls to connect, too.
Thank you for calling the White House comments line.
Thank you for calling the White House comment line. The comment line is currently closed, but your comment is important to the president, and we urge you to send us a comment online at www.whitehouse.gov/contact or send a message through Facebook Messenger. For government information by topic, visit www.usa.gov or call 1-800-FED-INFO. Thank you for calling. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Goodbye.
Okay, first of all, what the hell kind of robot was that talking to us?
It's a speak and spell, I think.
I don't know what that was, but okay, so your comments are important to us, but do not comment. It's closed. comment through Facebook. How in God's name do you do that? Track down their Facebook instant messenger? I'm told that the people who did succeed in doing that weren't able to even connect. It was turned off there as well. You do things like this enough, it's really going to frustrate people.
Yep, and I heard FOIA requests now are all through faxes and letters.
Yeah.
The online submission system for the pipeline thing is, I think you can email one person and also something you have to hand deliver or send a letter to the Army. All of the sort of easy ways to do, to participate and be an active citizen, they're being shut down. They're being reeled in. Mm-hmm. They're being closed off and control over our government by the people is getting further and further from our grasp.
The petition part of the whitehouse.gov website, still there, just being ignored completely because so many people have, well over the required amount for a response, so many people have said, release the damn tax returns already. Nothing. There won't be a response. Do this enough times, it will rile people up to the extent that you can't control it anymore. So interesting times ahead, maybe even dangerous times, as the song says.
Yeah, but you know, I truly think there's also an element of chaos that we should expect. And I think there's so many other tools now, mm-hmm. and ideas for ways to respond that, you know, it may seem that, you know, it'll be pushed to this breaking point, but I think that it'll be in conjunction. You know, you'll have activism and actions and but people really riled up. But there will be also a myriad of other things going on behind the scenes that you don't really hear about or you don't hear about until much later.
Well, okay. We want to hear from you, though, with your ideas, thoughts, experiences. OTW at 2600.com. We're out of time. Finn's Revolution is up next. Keep listening to WUSB here in Stony Brook. And we'll be updating you on all sorts of other things that are going on in the weeks ahead.
Wow, time flies.
It does. It really does. Have a good night.
The ship's gone. my friends. My friends, this is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook, the new and improved and hopefully technology all working beautifully tonight, which it seems to be. Stay tuned for some chaotic, fun, rockin' music, and who knows what else shall occur right here on WUSB Stony Brook on Finn's Revolution. Let's go.
my heart and why I love you so. I love you, baby, like a miner loves gold. So come on, baby, let the good time roll. Understood. It's even nicer when you're feeling good. You got me flipping like a flag on a pole. So come on, baby, and let the good time roll. Time roll.